Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files anytime you want to listen on your phone, mobile devices, or personal computer. When you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening.
Hi, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. In uncertain times, you need gear you can count on. That's why I teamed up with Daniel Vitalis to launch SupplySource.com. It's a new online retailer offering extremely durable gear for emergency preparedness and long-term survival. Everything we offer survives my daily use test on a ranch in Texas, plus Daniel's outdoor endurance test in the rugged wilderness of Maine. Most of the stuff we test ends up in a pile of trash because it breaks. The stuff that doesn't break, we stock it on SupplySource.com. To get the site started, we've launched it with a line of rugged, reliable, waterproof LED flashlights, now chosen by military and law enforcement everywhere. And we'll soon be adding a whole new brand of emergency water filters, family defense gear, and urban survival tools. When you want your gear to really work, get it from SupplySource.com. Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancers using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created WebSeed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery, and our Survival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at WebSeed.com.
Welcome to the Health Ranger Report with your host, Mike Adams.
Hello and welcome, everyone. This is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger at the Health Ranger Report. Today, we're joined by a very special guest, someone whose work I have admired for many years. He's an author, a researcher, an intellectual, an advocate of liberty at many different levels. Lou Rockwell joins us by Skype video. His website is lourockwell.com, and he's with us right now. Lou, thanks for joining us today.
Mike, great to be with you.
Well, it's great to have you on. As I mentioned in the intro there, I've admired your work for a very long time. Your website is one that I routinely go to get educated about the, what can we say, the encroachment of state power, the encroachment of state big government. Can you tell us what is the underlying philosophy of lourockwell.com and what you teach people?
Well, our philosophy is it's what Murray Rothbard called anarcho-capitalism. That is, we think that we first of all believe, of course, in a free market that, and private property, that's the basis of civilization. We also think that government, not governance, as I'll explain in a second, but government, the state, the institution that claims a monopoly of violence, claims to decide its own powers, decides how much you're going to pay for its own powers, and claims the right to rule you and to do everything, control your children, your neighborhood, your school, your business, your family, everything, that's an illegitimate institution, because it's based on force and violence. This is the one tool, if I can use one of their favorite words, that the government has, force and violence. Even if you look at anything you sign that's from the government, they say, better be careful or we're going to put you in jail. Because then that's, of course, what they do. They either cage you or they kill you. This is the institution that claims the right, if you don't pay your parking ticket, and if you sufficiently resist paying your parking ticket, they claim the right to kill you. So we think that institution is entirely illegitimate, that it's never justified to use force or coercion, violence against the innocent or the threat of violence. Never.
This is a really good point that you make throughout your writings and your radio appearances and other places that, that you speak, is that the government does enforce its will upon the people at gunpoint. And even people who, let's say, used to really believe in government as the compassionate savior, let's say, more and more they're seeing government being enforced at gunpoint against farmers, against parents who choose not to vaccinate their children, against parents who choose not to subject their children to chemotherapy. They're all being arrested at gunpoint, and that's shocking a lot of people. Are more people now coming on to your message because they realize that what you say is true?
Yes, people are waking up to the actual situation we're living in. Also, the government, of course, is getting worse, which also helps wake up people. So even more than has been the case in America, other countries, of course, may have had a worse situation. We're today in a terrible situation, and I think all of us are more and more realizing that people in the government, they love to do this to us. They enjoy feeling you up at the airport.
Right.
They enjoy sending young men to be killed and to kill in foreign countries. They enjoy controlling people. They enjoy making people evacuate their homes, grabbing your money. Of course, they want money and power. That's always the justification and the goal of government. But these are bad people. They're not good people. The people who rise to the top in government are, by 100%, very bad people. I don't care whether they're Republicans, Democrats, whatever other labels they give themselves. They're monsters, moral monsters.
I completely agree with you. And we've seen this, especially now with the rise of the TSA and how the TSA actually, in essence, they are looking to hire perverts and sociopaths. It's almost like they want the most monstrous, psychologically damaged people, because those are the only people who will reach down the pants of a six-year-old child and feel their buttocks or whatever and get paid for it. I mean, who would want to do that? I don't understand it.
F.A. Hayek has a great chapter in his book, The Road to Serfdom, called Why the Worst Rise to the Top. And he points out that in the private sector, by and large, you know, nothing is perfect, but by and large, the most talented, smartest, hardest working, most frugal, most far-seeing people rise to the top. Whereas in government, the worst people rise to the top. The ones who are the best at lying, who are the best demagogues, who are the most, who have no moral conscience whatsoever, don't mind killing people en masse, for example.
Right.
Maybe they even like it. So those are the people who, this is the people we're supposed to think of are protecting, you know, the common good, the national interest, the public interest, all these buzz phrases that are all just lies. The government has its own interest. The government is a parasite. It lives off the rest of us, and its interest is to diminish us, make itself more glorified and wealthier and more powerful.
Sure.
So it's always against the interests of the American people. Government is always and everywhere the enemy of civilization and of everything that's good.
That is a powerful statement. You just said government is always and everywhere the enemy of civilization. This is crucial for people to understand. This term that has been floating around recently, democide, which means death by government. And if you look at what have been the most dangerous institutions in the history of human civilization, they aren't terrorists, they aren't even the pharmaceutical companies, and they aren't the oil companies. They are, in fact, governments.
Well, you know, there was a great book that came out in the last century called The Black Book of Communism. That showed in its reign of terror up to that point, the communist governments had killed probably 100 million people, not including war, just in executing people.
Wow.
So how many people has the U.S. government killed, even without wars, with its wars? So these are murderous institutions, and we're supposed to think, again, that they're better than us. They're more, you know, they're the best and the brightest. They're serving the people and so forth. It's always the old British saying, never believe anything till it's officially denied. So you can always believe the opposite of what the government is saying, and you will virtually always be right.
Yeah, because now when we look at what the federal government is doing, so much of it is just theater. It's like watching one of those old professional wrestling matches where all the characters are made up and it's all scripted and they play on stage in front of you. Now we look at the FBI actually engineering the terrorist plots and driving the vans for the terrorists and then catching them. Wow, we caught the terrorists that we trained. You know, that's the FBI. We see all these incredible stories about how we killed bin Laden over and over again and then dumped his body in the ocean. And then the Navy SEALs that killed him, well, they magically disappear in a helicopter accident. It's just endless theater. Yeah. And how do what frustrates me is that so many people still believe it.
Yeah, and of course, this is nothing new. This was not invented by the U.S. We can go back to the days of Caesar Augustus when he set up his intelligence agencies. They were mostly involved in the actions of agents provocateurs, trying to stimulate people to speak out, to oppose him. And then they'd say, hey, you spoke out, we're going to kill you. And they'd warn everybody, look, there's all the terrible threats the emperor is facing. So it's, you know, every government does this, some more than others. But the U.S., of course, is one of the most tyrannical governments ever and ever in the world today, even though Americans are always raising the foam finger and saying, hey, we're number one, we're the freest, we're the best, we're the wealthiest. None of it's true. It's all a lie. We're not the freest. We're not the wealthiest. And the U.S. government was a much better operation when it was much smaller, of course. The bigger it gets, it becomes more and more evil and more detriment to the whole world, not just to us.
Right, right. And this is where this leads to some questions I really wanted to ask you. I've been thinking about this a lot, reading your website, reading a lot of other books about the history of America, educating myself. First of all, for those watching, if you really want an education in reality, go to lewrockwell.com. That's L-E-W, Rockwell.com. Go there and start reading the articles. And you post articles every day from various authors.
We do. We have a new page 6 days a week, and some of them are links. Some of them are articles written specifically for LRC. And it's brand new every day. The weekend, Saturday and Sunday is the same. Otherwise, it's a new page every day.
It's an extraordinary website resource, so I hope you definitely take advantage of that, folks. But here's the question to you, Lou. I remember reading you years ago and recognizing that your position was anti-state, saying that we would be better off without a government at all. And I remember thinking at that time, I thought that was strange. I thought it felt uncomfortable to me. Well, I've been educated since then, and more, as I'm considering these issues, I say, oh, my gosh, Lou Rockwell was right. But how do we now, how can we get to, well, these aren't canned questions, by the way, which is why I'm rephrasing them, but what would an anti-state nation look like where we didn't have a government? What would it look like? How would the common things that people might cite, well, how would we build roads, for example? That's a common question you get. Can you discuss those things? How would we function without a federal government telling us what to do all the time?
Well, first of all, there's we can look back to our own history to see a time when the federal government wasn't telling us what to do. Tocqueville talks about the fact that you could just, you know, walk in and make an appointment and talk to the president. And he had none of the pomp and circumstance about him that the European monarchs did. And that for the regular American, what the president was doing had absolutely no effect on their lives. So we did have times, even though we still had a government. And, I just had one quick point. I'm not, you know, the typical, when people use anarchist as an expletive, which I notice the government is starting to do in recent times, it implies that, you know, and there are some communist anarchists who believe in this, there should be no such thing as authority. I believe in, you know, there's family authority, there's business authority, neighborhood authority, and so forth, but it's not by violence and by the threat of violence. So there is natural authority in society, sort of governance, as Albert J. Nock put it. Rather than government, but how would you build roads? I don't know. We could look back to the history of our own country. We had roads being built in this country long before there was a federal Department of the Highways or any other federal agency. One way that it was done, I have a wonderful old newspaper from the late 18th century from Boston, and all of the bottom of the newspaper, of the front page of the newspaper, are all these little ads for lotteries to build turnpikes, and people would buy a chance on the lottery. And also the turnpikes charged a fee, and there were roads being built all over Massachusetts in the 18th century. The government wasn't doing it. So how would we have it? I mean, how do we provide any service in the market? I can't necessarily know. I mean, if I were an entrepreneur, this is what one of the key great things about an entrepreneur, you can almost sort of see into the future and think, well, gee, if certain things were done differently economically, there's a lot of money to be made. I unfortunately don't have that kind of ability, but... I don't know how roads, but I think we should think about We'd be wrong to think it would be just like this, but the roads are owned privately. This is a total distortion of what exists
right,
today.
Of course.
Right, the government highways and so forth. We don't know what how would people be transported? Would we all be, you know, in some sort of robot airplanes? I mean, I don't know, but we should not assume it would be anything like this. The only thing we can know 100% for sure is that if the government is not involved, if private businesses are involved, that it's going to be serving the customer, and it's also going to not be ripping off the people, and it's going to be far more efficient and far more beautiful than anything that this apparatus of violence and the threat of violence called the government would ever come up with in a million years.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the key philosophical components of your argument is that individuals will always make better decisions about the use of resources, the use of time, the use of investments than a centrally planned economy.
Well, if it's your own property, just think about your own life. If it's your own property, if it's your own lawn, your own house, your own business, do you take care of it better than some guy who would be assigned to it from the Department of Human Resources or whatever?
Right.
I mean, of course,
this doesn't
exactly require a high IQ to come to the correct, vision of what a society should be. I think if you can just sort of take the, you know, if you can take the right pill. If we're all trained from the earliest days in the government schools to think that, gee, we're all nasty and selfish and rotten and horrible in the private sector. Thank goodness we have the government that's, you know, above us, it's in the clouds, it's God begotten, and it's there to do everything for us. Thank goodness for these wonderful people who, of course, make far more money than we do on average.
Yes.
And are rapacious predators, not helpful to society at all.
Let's shift gears to the European scene right now, because one of the frustrating things that's happening is that even in recognizing the failure of out-of-control spending, debt spending, a nanny state government, the European population is somehow continuing to choose bigger government as their only solution. We saw this in France recently with the election. Greece is in big trouble right now. Spain is in trouble. Ireland. We've seen... It's like even faced with the evidence of failure, they're still choosing more government. What's going on there, Lou?
Well, again, everybody's been brought up to think that our salvation is in government, maybe just changing the government, changing the people at the head of the government. But I do think that more and more people are coming to the conclusion that's not correct. Again, part of it's, you know, the propaganda. How many people even in Europe, where this is much more of a immediate concern than it is in this country, although we were in trouble too, how many people in Europe realize they're being stepped on for the benefit of the big banks? This entire thing is not about bailing out, quote-unquote, Greece or bailing out, quote-unquote, Spain. It's about bailing out the banks. That is what all this horrendous stuff in Europe that's going on is going to get much worse.
Yes.
So there needs to be, you know, in effect, a revolution where people talk about another thing that's propped up entirely by the government, fractional reserve banks. These banks are entirely illegitimate. They're entirely bankrupt. They're only kept in existence by ripoffs through the government. That's true. And so we all live in the West, in Japan, too, in sort of a bankocracy these days, where the banks are ruling things. We need to overthrow the banks.
Well, even, you know, Alex Jones talks about America is a banker-occupied territory. It's run by Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs has put people into positions, unelected positions of leadership in nations across the European Union. It really is a takeover. It is banker imperialism. Do you disagree with that, or is that accurate?
No, it's not a takeover. It's been taken over.
Right?
I mean, it's already happened. And we also have, for the first time ever, the prevalence of Keynesian economics, which holds that, deficit spending and big spending and government control of the economy is the way to prosperity. Of course, it's the exact opposite of the truth, like everything else the government peddles.
Sure.
But it's also, as Joe Salerno puts out, it's the economics of government power, which is why they really love it. So I don't know. We have to educate ourselves. We have to try to educate others about how we're not only the errors of these people, but the fact, as Murray Rothbard always used to point out, that they're ripping us off.
Yes.
These are thieves. They're stealing from you just as much as a mugger or a burglar would steal from you, except, of course, they make a mugger and a burglar look like good guys by comparison.
Of course. Well, you mentioned education. I've got a question for you along those lines. One of the challenges in all of this is that it only takes, let's say, the mind of a simpleton to believe in big government being the solution provider, the parent of everything. That doesn't take a complex mind. But to really understand, let's say, Austrian economics or, you know, Ludwig von Mises Institute and all of these things, to understand that actually takes education. It requires a more complex and deeper understanding of human psychology, of behavior, of history, of economic interactions. Mm-hmm. How on earth, Lou, do we get our dwindling intellectual resources of people who are being dumbed down everywhere, how do we bring them into the realm of understanding so that we don't make the same mistakes that have been made throughout history?
Well, first of all, you're right about everybody being dumbed down. That's the purpose of the public schools, to train you to obey the government and also to make sure that you eschew critical thinking and independent thinking. That's the purpose of the government schools. On the other hand, we can look at what Ron Paul has achieved among America's young people, and you don't have to be a scholar. You don't have to read a bookshelf of books. Just one good book can help you understand what's going on. Even just a good article can light a fire in your mind. And this is what Ron Paul has done, because not only is he personally inspiring all these kids, and it's millions of kids in this country and all around the world, they really are the future. So he's personally inspired them, but he also gets them to read. So, and again, you know, it never is needed. The majority is never needed for social change. All change for good or evil comes about through motivated minorities. So again, if we look at these Ron Paul kids, I must say I have tremendous hope for the future because of them and because of what Ron has done.
You know, that's a good point. I was engaged in some training the other day, and it was a dozen people there, and one of them was a 20-year-old man who was in school, and he started talking about the problems with Keynesian economics, and he started talking about Austrian economics and Ron Paul. I was astonished. The kid's 20 years old, and he gets this, and his professors don't even know this stuff.
You know, they're not only the 20-year-olds, it's the teenagers, even pre-teenagers. I've never seen anything like it in my whole life. And I think it's, of course, the media wants to stop it. They can't. The Republicans would like to stop it. They can't. So it's quite thrilling. And it shows what can be done. Obviously, Ron Paul's a unique figure, and we're very lucky to be living in the time of Ron Paul. But he's shown what can be done, and other people do it on a smaller scale too. I think it's so. We need to light a spark. You know, if you look at another great thing, of course, that's happening is homeschooling,
yes.
Where the children, among other things, never lose the desire to learn. They never lose the love of learning, which is beaten out of public school kids by the first grade, second grade? I mean, where they just hate the guts of school. They don't want to go to school. They're not interested in anything the creepy teacher has to say. And who can blame them? So this is, by the way, design. This is not an accident. This is the way they want it.
Speaking of creepy teachers, you must have seen this video that went viral, a recording of a teacher berating the student for questioning Obama in the same way that the teacher was questioning Romney. And the teacher, it was astonishing. The teacher said, oh, you're going to be arrested if you criticize Obama, and you can't challenge him because he is the president, where Romney just wants to be the president. I mean, come on. How can a teacher believe these things?
Well, I don't know. Maybe she was just, you know, ill-educated. I don't know. I mean, I remember a time a number of years ago, and this was a huge controversy, when a good guy who was governor of Alabama had said all the teachers should be able to pass the high school graduation exam. So there was a huge outrage from all the teachers, but they only did it a couple of years because about 40% of them flunked. So,
wow.
I mean, these are not an impressive bunch, the public school
well,
teachers.
Well, how about members of Congress being required to pass a constitutional exam? You know?
Well, yeah. I mean, actually, members of Congress, you know, they actually tend to be, I'm sorry to say, not stupid. They're just evil. So, because they don't care what's in the Constitution. They don't care about a lot of stuff. They just care about, you know, the reasons that people go to Washington, power and money, or go into the government otherwise.
That's right.
And so they're salaam, they're glorified, and, you know, the great Lysander Spooner, the 19th century anarchist, wrote an essay about what's the difference between a congressman and a highwayman. And he said, the difference is the highwayman doesn't ask you to call him the honorable.
Very good, very good. Now, we know, looking into history, Lou, we know that civilizations rise and fall with great regularity, in fact, and often for the same reasons, the same mistakes over and over again. How long does this American empire have left? I mean, I know you don't have a crystal ball. I'm not asking you to name a calendar date, but But clearly it's unsustainable. What are your thoughts on how long can this game go on with the fractional reserve banking, the fiat currency, all of this? What are your thoughts?
Well, if they hadn't gone crazy, if they hadn't gone completely insane, if we weren't entirely ruled by neocons and Keynesians and all these other evil groups, they might have kept the thing going for a long time. Certainly the Romans lasted for a very long time. But this is a very shaky system financially and economically. And the amount of money printing that's going on, not only here, but in Europe and in Japan, is just horrendous. And it's going to result in either mega inflation or suppressed inflation with price and wage controls, even worse than hyperinflation.
Oh, right.
And
right.
So I think the whole thing is very precarious. I actually don't think it's got long to go. You know, obviously, if I could actually know, I'd be rich. But my guess is 10 years, if I had to pull out maybe not even that. When the end comes, it's going to be a surprise to everybody, us and the government included. It could happen tomorrow morning. So, you know, Facebook could have turned out to bring down the American economy.
Yeah, let's talk about that was a very big deal IPO that, of course, has made headline news now for being completely in shambles now. The insiders got too greedy. The stock plummeted after it opened, after the offering was made. And there was talk that a Facebook sell-off could trigger a much larger sell-off. And this brings up a question. Isn't this sort of a crack in the foundation of the corrupt Wall Street system?
Sure, and there have been many cracks in the corrupt system really ever since 2007, 2008, before that too. But I think that the whole system is entirely propped up by the government. Virtually no retail investors anymore. A lot of people were brought in to the Facebook IPO and, of course, got taken.
Right.
Got their wallets picked. So I'm sure, by the way, this is going to be a successful company. I'm very worried about their connections to the CIA and the NSA and the various intelligence agencies.
Sure.
But it's certainly a very creative, interesting company. Probably not at $38 a share for a very, very long time. So, yeah, I think they made a mistake, although the insiders, of course, didn't make a mistake. They made big bucks.
Yes.
But I think it undermines the system. I think it undermines future IPOs. I think it makes it tougher for Wall Street. And so in one sense, you don't want to be tougher to raise capital. You have to be able to raise capital for a growing economy.
Sure.
On the other hand, this is more and more a government operation for the big banks, the big Wall Street banks, and the big special interests against the people. So in that sense, the less they can do to hurt us, of course, the better. So
yes.
I don't know. There's a race going on between the forces of the market and the forces of power, which has always been the case. And we just have to see. But I think Facebook may be looked back upon by future historians as having been a significant thing for the American economy.
Yeah, it's always hard to know the crash is happening when you're in it. It's only in retrospect, really, that you can identify a financial crash. That was even true with the previous big crashes, Black Monday included.
Or 20 or 29, really. I mean, Mises, by the way, had said it was coming, but he was one of the very few to understand it.
Yeah, I remember even as it was crashing, well, I remember reading, obviously I wasn't alive at that time, but even as it was crashing, month after month, year after year, all these Harvard academics would come out and say how great the economy was, and the rebound was imminent.
Oh, sure. And they all held that there could never be a crash again. That really the government and the Federal Reserve had abolished crashes, whereas, of course, the Federal Reserve creates crashes.
Of course.
The Federal Reserve is the generator of crashes, as you know.
So let's fast forward, let's say, 5 years, and we have a financial collapse of the U.S. government system, at least as we know it today. What would you say, Lou, would be the most effective replacement for it? What would that look like, and how? I know it's a big question, but what could we hope
just
for?
Slightly.
Yeah, but I mean, what should we even start to imagine as something to rise out of the ashes of failure into a sustainable society that benefits humanity for thousands of years?
Well, I sure hope people are prepared to take care of themselves. I hope that they own some gold and silver and don't have all their money in the bank and don't have everything in common stocks on the New York Stock Exchange. And I hope that people are not going to be dependent on Medicare and Social Security and similar kinds of programs because they're not going to continue. You may still get a check, you just won't buy anything.
Sure.
You're listening to the Health Ranger Report on Natural News Radio. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this break.
Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files anytime you want to listen on your phone, mobile devices, or personal computer. When you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening.
Hi, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. In uncertain times, you need gear you can count on. That's why I teamed up with Daniel Vitalis to launch SupplySource.com. It's a new online retailer offering extremely durable gear for emergency preparedness and long-term survival. Everything we offer survives my daily use test on a ranch in Texas, plus Daniel's outdoor endurance test in the rugged wilderness of Maine. Most of the stuff we test ends up in a pile of trash because it breaks. The stuff that doesn't break, we stock it on SupplySource.com. To get the site started, we've launched it with a line of rugged, reliable, waterproof LED flashlights, now chosen by military and law enforcement everywhere. And we'll soon be adding a whole new brand of emergency water filters, family defense gear, and urban survival tools. When you want your gear to really work, get it from SupplySource.com. Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancers using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created Webseed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery, and our Survival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at WEBSEED.com.
Or maybe you won't even get the check. We don't know exactly what's ahead and what kind of looting the government plans in the meantime, but this system is indeed unsustainable, as you point out. So when there's a crash, as has typically been the case, this is the time for radical social change. Sometimes it's radical social change, of course, but for the worst. Think of Franklin Roosevelt, although
sure,
Herbert Hoover was bad enough too. But it can be a time for the better. And I think there's been so much work done over the decades by the great Austrian economists, by the libertarians, by Ron Paul, and so many others. I think far more people are aware of things now. So, whether this could ever be a no government paradise while we're here on Earth, that's a question. I think we always want to work for freedom. Whether we ever get complete freedom, any more than we'll ever abolish all murders,
right,
or all robberies, we're never going to do it. But that's the goal. You want to get rid of all murders.
But it does seem like sort of the evolution in the philosophy of humankind needs to take the next step in terms of, well, at first it was, kings and queens rule over the little people. And then we have this so-called democracy. It was supposed to be a republic, but it hasn't panned out that way. If we could get back to a republic, that would potentially be a great improvement over the current situation. But it seems like the next step is sort of, let's rule ourselves for a change.
Well, yeah, I mean, decentralization and self-government, that's exactly right. There's no way that you can have a free society in a country as big as the United States. It's just too big. I mean, Aristotle and many people subsequently have talked about it brings tyranny when you have a gigantic country. It's just is inevitable because you get a centralized government. And of course, as Jefferson always pointed out, centralized government is the enemy of freedom.
Sure.
So I think it has to. We need total decentralization. I mean, our ideal ought to be something like, say, Germany before the Treaty of Westphalia, when there were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of little tiny countries. When it's a little tiny country, it's much more difficult for them to enforce tyranny. People can leave, among other questions.
I think that's
the goal. Decentralization. Again, you have to educate yourself as to the monarchy and democracy and so forth. Hans Hermann Hoppe's great book on Democracy, the God That Failed, points out that monarchies could never be as tyrannical as democracies, because for one reason, everybody realized that the government was a separate entity living off them. It was the king and the Versailles, the court at Versailles, and they're dressed in silks and they have fancy carriages and palaces and big banquets and so forth. Everybody knew they were living off them. With the democracy, we've all been conned into the view that, well, gee, it's us. You know, you hear people talking, should we go to Mars? Well, it's not, we going to Mars. It's the government, NASA, and special interests associated with NASA.
Yeah.
So the government's not us. So, but democracy has been one of the greatest inventions from the standpoint of big government ever in the history of the human race. It's fooled people so that while nobody thought that they could become the king, everybody thinks, well, gee, maybe I could become the president. Of course, no, you can't, but you're fooled into that. And you're fooled into believing that we are the government. We're doing this to ourselves. It's not. There still is a parasitical overclass ruling the rest of us. They're just not living in identifiable palaces and identifiable silk suits and so forth and identifiable wigs and fancy carriages. But if you've ever been to Washington, D.C. recently, you see they're all living very, very well there, mansions and all in limos and the best restaurants and stores. And it's the wealthiest, of course, area in the country.
You can earn $100,000 a year being a TSA pedophile.
Well, and, they all are, the typical government employee at all levels is paid twice what the typical taxpayer is paid.
Incredibly.
And yet we're constantly told, oh, the poor cop, the poor school teacher, the poor fireman, oh, they're sacrificing for the public. They're actually, of course, living it up, working very little, and ripping us off. So to the extent that people start to see these people as their opponents and seek to want to diminish them and diminish the role of government, we're going to be much better off economically, morally, and in terms of just basic freedoms.
Yeah.
So that's always what we have to be looking at, even if we might not ever achieve our goal fully. We have to aim towards that. And of course, we're living in a time when it's been just the opposite, when the government is becoming more and more totalitarian right before our eyes.
To the point you just mentioned there, there's a great video about the GSA employee and the party in Vegas and the GSA contractors, how they were making all this money and having they made their own rap songs on the government clock, and they were celebrating all their parties and how even the, I think the ATF can't touch their guns and all this. And this was put out on YouTube. They thought it was fun, and they didn't see anything wrong with doing this.
We all need to realize, I don't care whether it's the GSA or FBI or the Supreme Court or the White House or any EPA, any other government agency, they're living it up off of us, and they love doing it. They don't like us. We're the cash cows. We're the stupidos who just pay up when we're ordered to, and that they're living it up, and they're having a great time. And these, are not good people. I don't say everybody who works for the post office is a bad person. But sometimes people are trapped for economic reasons, and that's the only job they can get and so forth. But especially as you get higher and higher in the government, these people are our enemies. It's not, it's quote-unquote Osama bin Laden or the terrorists, the Arabs, the Muslims, or the communists, or the Southerners, or the Spanish, or the Japanese, or the British, or whatever. There's always some outside force. Some of these people, of course, monstrous. Some of them not at all monstrous. But there's always, this is always government. I'm sure the Babylonians were warning about the Assyrians coming over the hill. So this is they want to scare us with these outside forces. So they look down on us, they disrespect us, and they pickpocket us, and they have a great time. And you know what? We don't want to have that happening. We want to stop them. I'd like to see them go out and get a real job at McDonald's or something.
Sure. Yeah. Of course. I want to ask you about this manufactured crisis tactic that government uses to expand its own power. But are you doing okay on time? Can you be with us a few more minutes?
Sure.
Okay. Because you just sort of segued into this, that what we see with every government in history, but even today now with the U.S. federal government, we see all this manufacturing of crises, whether it is false flag terror attacks, or again the FBI plotting the terror attacks and then allowing them to almost be carried out and then catching them. We see sometimes state police officers giving drugs to people and then busting them for the drugs. We see the war. The wars are manufactured, and that of course benefits the whole military industrial complex. It seems like if government just didn't exist tomorrow, if we woke up and there was no government, it seems like most of the so-called problems that we believe are real would also vanish overnight as well.
Of course, that's right. However, the people who are making all the money off government and all the money off wars and pharma and, you know, go down the list, the military-industrial complex and big ag and all the stuff, all the money, all the things they make money, these people are very unhappy. Also, they get a charge out of this. It's more than just the money and the power. They live for this stuff. They live to do damage. They live to do harm. I was trying to remember when the devil took our Lord up to the mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world, and he said, you know, in effect, these are within my gift. I can give you those if only you'll bow down before me. So what does it mean for the devil to say all of government is within his gift? Well, I think we're being told something there. There's something wrong with government. There's something morally wrong with these institutions of violence. We don't want them. We don't need them. And they're crushing us. They've got the hobnail boot in our throat, and they are pressing it down. We're all being crushed. Our freedoms are being taken away. Our children are being threatened. Our lives are being destroyed. Our futures are being destroyed. Are we going to let it continue? Are we actually going to try to change things? And the first thing you always have to do is change yourself. In fact, maybe that's the only thing you can ever be sure of doing right, is to change yourself. But you can educate yourself, you can read, you can learn, and once you learn enough, economics, history, political science, health matters, so forth, then people will come to you and you can have a real effect. But the first thing is you've got to change yourself. So before we worry about changing the government, before we worry about changing our next-door neighbor or the editor of the newspaper or whatever, the professor at the college, change yourself.
Yeah, well said. That is key, because of course the government we get ultimately is a reflection of the aggregate psychology of the people who reside in that area. Was it Churchill who said, "In a democracy, people get the government they deserve"?
I don't know. Certainly, Churchill helped give us a rot.
Yes.
Churchill was not a good guy.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
Yeah. Socialist and warmonger.
So last question set for you, Lou. And again, I want to encourage people to visit your website, lourockwell.com. And also, you've got books out there that people can find on Amazon.com. Can you give us a title of a book that you might recommend people check out?
Well, if they want to take a look at Murray Rothbard's For a New Liberty, that's a good place to start. Really anything by Rothbard. You could take a look at his essay on the state and on the war, peace, and the state. The anatomy of the state, and also war, peace, in the state, that are free on LRC. All these things are free on Mises.org, too. You can look at many, many hundreds and hundreds of books that you can read for free, download for free. But I would start with Rothbard. He is the key thinker when it comes to matters of freedom.
Sure.
And also economics. So he's also one of the greatest writers ever to exist. So this is not heavy going. Of course, some of his more technical economics is... You have to concentrate. But his stuff that's intended for lay people is so brilliantly written, so interesting, just grabs you and pulls you in. And before you know it, you're having so much fun learning all the things the government doesn't want you to know, but all the things that are essential for you and for your family, for your future, that you do know.
Yeah, Rothbard has even been influential in some of my own work. We did a parody video, I guess, about a year ago about the economy, where... we said, well, if war is great for the economy, then, you know, we can have abundance by bombing our own cities.
Of course, they actually advocate that murder and mass destruction is economically good. And, of course, it is economically good for, you know, Lockheed Martin.
Yeah,
they're
right.
Doing great.
Sure.
But for society as a whole, you know, Mises said it was like arguing that war is great because the undertakers do well.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
You know, the undertakers may do well. and that's their business. You can't begrudge it to them. But you don't start a war on the grounds that it's going to be great for the undertakers.
Exactly. Okay, okay. Getting to my last question. One of the tactics that we see government use today, well, it's really a two-pronged tactic to expand its own power, kind of like a cancer tumor. Government wants to get bigger, but to do that, it has to also take steps to destroy the private economy. So when we see the attacks, for example, on Gibson guitars for using their so-called illegal wood and threatening to move their, you know, the government saying, move your jobs overseas and then we'll leave you alone, or how the government is paying automobile manufacturers to move their facilities to China, we see then this creation of more dependence, more victimization, which makes the government more powerful. So it's a two-pronged, destroy the private economy, make more people homeless and out of work, so more people depend on the government, and then they get the votes for bigger government.
Government is a very stupid institution. It's an evil institution, but it's stupid. And therefore, most of the direction and the new ideas and that sort of thing come from bad people in the private sector. But I used to think the government had actually learned something from the Soviet Union and other communist systems, that it wasn't even in the government's interest to have everybody be poor. But, you know, I think maybe Aesop has something better to tell us about government, you know, in this famous story of the scorpion and the frog. And the scorpion keeps asking the frog to take him across the river. And he says, okay, if you promise, you know, not to hurt me. And he says, no, I won't. So halfway across, scorpion stings the frog and he's drowning. They're both going to drown. And the frog says, well, why the heck do you do that? And the scorpion says, well, it's my nature.
Right.
Well, you know, it's the nature of the government to steal, to do damage, to wreck, to murder, to make things miserable. And so, you know, all we can do, there's no reforming government. All we can do is try to make less of government. All we can try to do is restrict government. And the first thing you do is, you know, they all depend on the consent of the governed, because they're a minority of parasites as compared to the majority of victims. So to the extent that we can withhold our consent from the government, even just individually, laugh at them, yuck it up at them, undermine them, if enough of us do that, enough of us don't bother to vote, for example, which is another joke,
sure,
the Democratic joke, since your vote doesn't count, then we can go into that if you want to, but to the extent that you withhold your consent from the government, this bothers them. It bothers them when people don't vote, for example. It bothers them when people aren't focused on their crazy news events, when people are focused on their own lives. So the extent that you don't pay attention to government, to the extent that you withhold your consent in the sense of you pay attention to them from an economic, historical, and so forth, a serious standpoint, but all the stuff they put on television or whether, you know, Obama, I notice MSNBC has a political program every morning where the first thing they announce is, what was the soup of the day in the White House?
Oh, really?
Well, you know, what is it? It's like King Louis XIV in Versailles or something. Who cares what the soup of the day in the White House? But that's the kind of thing they want you to focus on. So we pay no attention to that. Pay attention to the serious damage they're doing. Withhold our consent from the monstrous deeds that they commit. We really can, if enough of us do it, we can weaken them. This has happened before in history. It can happen in our own history. We actually are not fated to just be tied up in a ball and tossed on a well and be forgotten, although sometimes seems like that or put in a camp or whatever that the government would like to do. We don't actually have to have that happen. So if everybody, you know, follows the kinds of things you do, we talk about all the, you know, all the rotten things they're doing to the health of the American people. What the pharmaceutical companies are up, the FDA, the CDC, all the Adamsian agencies that you do such great work against. We do have a chance, so don't be apathetic. Fighting is fun. It's fun to fight the evildoers, and it's fun to learn, and it's fun to do some good in your life. So we don't have to accept this, so let's all get going.
Well said, Lou Rockwell, everybody. And the website is lourockwell.com. Lou, I really want to thank you for taking the time to share your thoughts with us today.
Great to be with you, Mike. Thank you.
All right, you too. Take care. All right, that was the interview with Lou Rockwell, everybody. Again, the website is lourockwell.com. Enjoy your education in reality. And watch for more video interviews here on the Health Ranger Report and naturalnews.com. Take care. Hello and welcome everyone to the Health Ranger Report. This is Mike Adams with naturalnews.com. This is a special interview with Sean Cohen, author of 14 and Out, a course that helps smokers quit the addiction by learning innovative techniques and strategies that have never been taught to you. It's not about chewing gum that has nicotine in it, transferring your addiction from cigarettes to gum. This is about really learning how addiction works so that you can free yourself from that addiction for the rest of your life. The course is available on webseed.com, and the author of that course joins us right now. Sean Cohen, thanks for joining us today. It's great to have you on.
Great. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, man. So start with the beginning. I assume that you used to be addicted to cigarettes as well. Is that right?
I smoked in college, and my grandfather died of lung cancer, my mother's father, when I was six. So that was a good deterrent to start things off. So I never got too deep into the addiction, but I do know about it.
Well, back in the 1920s and 30s, the Journal of the American Medical Association ran full-page ads quoting doctors that said cigarettes are good for you.
Right.
How could they be wrong?
How could they be wrong? They started off kind of instilling that belief that they were good for you, that they helped with digestion. And there were ads that said if you smoked one between courses during Thanksgiving, it helped with digestion. So I think that's where people get the concept now that if they have a cigarette after a meal, they feel better digested.
Really? Okay, interesting. So let's start with the myths. What are the myths that people need to understand and dispel, let's say, about quitting smoking? There's a lot of disinformation out there. You've covered that in your course. But, you know, hit us with it, man. Give us the big myths here.
Number one, I think, is the amount of chemicals that are in a cigarette. When people hear about how many chemicals, they don't really believe it right away. It just doesn't seem realistic that there's 4,000 chemicals. But I actually went to Home Depot and Lowe's and checked out pesticides. And if you pick up a jug of pesticide like Roundup, they don't list any of the ingredients. And there are a ton of ingredients in pesticides. And that's one of the big myths that needs to be dispelled. And people need to understand that there's not only pesticides sprayed on their tobacco leaves, but most of them are genetically modified now to contain pesticides. And so it's adding to the whole central nervous system disorders and malfunctions.
Well, but let me clarify something. So there are multiple sources of the chemicals in cigarettes. You're talking about the GMO tobacco grows the pesticide in its own leaves. Then there's the pesticides that are sprayed on the tobacco. But then aren't there also chemicals that are added that are blended with the leaves during manufacturing?
They're blending tobaccos together. That can make it stronger in itself. But then things like ammonia that make the nicotine into a vapor-ready form so that it goes to your brain and it goes to your heart much quicker. People don't realize the potency of nicotine.
So how does all these chemicals then make addiction worse, or does it? What's the link?
It definitely makes it worse. Most people, if you ask them what the big addiction with smoking is, they say nicotine. I think because they feel that little relief, that 15 or 20 minute relief from what I call the cigarette hangover. All these chemicals are making people feel anxious, or smokers feel nervous. They need a break from that feeling. So the nicotine is just kind of a quick revival. It's a 20-minute aspirin for the cigarette hangover, and that's what feeds the vicious cycle more than just, okay, I need a pep or I need a little bit of relaxation.
I see. So you're saying the chemicals make you feel like crap because they're so toxic, and you're inhaling them, they're going right in your bloodstream and right in your brain. So then the nicotine gives you a little bit of a pickup, of a boost from that feeling like crap that you call a cigarette hangover. So isn't it interesting? The cigarette's providing the problem and the solution at the same time.
It's almost like if you saw Super Size Me when he said he got a week or two into the McDonald's diet and he said he had to eat to get rid of the headache. And then 2 hours later, it would come back.
Wow.
The sugar right. was getting rid of the headache temporarily.
Okay, right. So complete complete substance addiction dependency at that point, a chemical dependency.
Yeah, and that's the fear of quitting. People don't want to spend money. They don't want to spend time. They don't want to commit to quitting because of the fear of that feeling of not being able to relieve themselves of that hangover, that horrible chemical.
Right, right.
I
want to ask you about what's your most powerful tip for people who do wish to quit. I also want to mention, I know you lay it all out in your course, 14 and out, at webseed.com. So check that out, folks, if you want some more strategies. But I've known people who, well, it's like this. A lot of people who smoke cigarettes, eventually they end up with heart disease or heart attacks or cancer. And I found that very few of those people actually ever quit. But all of them say they quit. You know what I mean? They become secret
right.
smokers because the addiction
right.
is so strong that socially they have to tell everybody, oh, yeah, I quit smoking. But behind the scenes, they've got cigarettes stuffed into their sock drawer or whatever, and they're still smoking away. And of course, that ends up killing them. Why is the addiction so strong that it makes people engage in these deceptive behaviors to such extremes?
Well, the nicotine takes the place of dopamine, which gives you a natural feelings of relaxation, feelings of motivation, and ways to deal with like fight or flight situations. So when they've robbed their system, almost like diabetics have to deal with the insulin, they're using the nicotine to justify, like, mentally, physically, spiritually, the fact that they don't know how to deal with stress. So when they quit cigarettes, say it's 4 months later and you've quit cold turkey and maybe you didn't even use any program or you didn't get any help and you quit cold turkey and all of a sudden stress hits. They believe from experience that smoking a cigarette will actually relieve them of that stress, but it's more of a mental state of mind, and it's also a lot of the core habitual things that they engage when they smoke, like the breathing. You know, they're breathing in and breathing out. Okay, do that 2 packs a day. You're doing that 500 times a day. Try doing some breathing exercises without smoking, and you can relieve a lot of the stress. So there's a lot more to it than just the chemical addiction.
Wow, that's a really good point. I never realized that they're actually practicing breatharians, or breatharians, I guess is the term.
Right.
But they just have, tobacco leaf smoke in their breath. But yeah, what if they just did breathing exercise without the nicotine, without all the chemicals? That's a really good point. What is the number one tip that people need to take away from this of what they can do that actually works to help them quit addiction?
Well, not only are they lacking usually the core eating habits that give you energy. You know, if you're smoking, you figure you're not that healthy, that you could just go off and, you know, have your fast food and have your sandwiches at 3 a.m, your deli sandwiches or whatever. But you've depleted all of your systems. You've depleted the nutrients from your systems. And so you not only need to come in with a strong nutritional plan, but it's got to be super strong the first 6 months, because 95% of smokers go back to smoking after they quit if they don't have help within the first 6 months. So you've got this period where you really need to fortify with nutrition, with supplements, because, you know, we don't get all the nutrition from food. You know, you'd have to eat 10 salads a day to get it all.
Do you give specific recommendations? Because I know there's a lot of talk about certain amino acids. There are certain Amazon herbs, you know, from South America that really help. There are certain minerals that help. Do you talk about those specifics?
Yes, I get very specific. There's different foods and supplements and herbs. Mucuna, which is labeled under the dopamine product, is very effective for killing the cravings because it raises your dopamine level. And that kills the cravings that you feel for nicotine, which is really just that feel-good feeling or that relaxation feeling. And then things like spring water, dark organic chocolate fights depression. There's a lot of snacking. Like, it's a hand-to-mouth thing when you smoke. So you give up smoking, what are you going to do all day? You're used to that hand-to-mouth motion. If you substitute that with, like, berries, or raw nuts, if you substitute a lot of your behavioral habits with things that are productive, with things that make you feel better, with foods that make you feel better, then you've not only ended a bad habit, but you've started a bunch of good habits.
Very good. All right. Well, thank you, Sean Cohen, for putting this course out there. And thanks for joining us today. It's been an interesting conversation.
Excellent. I appreciate it.